Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and John Osher.
Hey, the Ozone will be along in a minute. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM and Metro Rooter Wednesday. I didn't miss anything yesterday, did I, Tony? It wasn't like any special occasion yesterday, was it?
This is a weird week.
It is a weird week.
It's the first time we've sat across from each other this week with me out Monday. Yesterday, I got to deal with... I'm gonna get through the first segment.
I thought, Tony, I would get to how bad did I look yesterday?
You were off again?
You were...
Stop it.
He was
I was here. I was here. Where were you yesterday? I didn't see you in Jacksonville yesterday,
I was in Gainesville.
Yeah, see what I'm talking about? Just going to Gatorland?
He was so sick. And as soon as she told me I'm going to stick around for the first segment, the thought in my head was, get out of here. Like, that's what I was thinking, because I was like, I don't want to deal with sick guy.
I don't want to get sick all over Lauren Brooks.
Right. I was like, I don't want to deal with this. And then finally, after about 5 minutes of saying he was going to stick around, duke it out for the first segment, he's like, I can't do this.
Well, usually,
I gotta go home.
Usually when you purge yourself, Tony, you feel a little bit better. That initial 5 minutes, you're like, oh, maybe that did it. No, that's not everything.
Right.
All right. Woo. I just, I'm going to say this. I'm never eating clam chowder again the rest of my life.
This is a Metro Rooter Wednesday.
It is a Metro Rooter. Really. And they were in great demand yesterday. It was a Metro Rooter Tuesday here. I'm glad. You know what, John? I always consider it a small victory. We have a bathroom down the hall, and sometimes, you know, you have to go pre-show. And there's the one stall. And when you go in there and it's empty, you're like, hey, that's a small victory, right? Because you don't have to wait. Yesterday, fortunately, in the 5 or 6 trips I made to the men's room yesterday, there was no one in the bathroom, period.
Yeah, I never had that kind of luck.
It's always
never
that lucky.
Standing around.
Maybe they saw me coming and they cleared out.
I don't know you. Yeah.
On top of that, someone was cooking bacon in the hallway. I'm not kidding you. And maybe in the microwave down the hall. Not a good day, but I feel better today. My snark is back.
I'm going to fight through the first second.
I had the meat sweats, as Joe Fortunato put it yesterday. I had a cold sweat.
It was awful.
I do believe I lost about 10 pounds yesterday.
Hey, nothing like the flu, baby.
You know, come on. Knock it out of me. Right there, I'm in much better shape. Johnny, are you done with Jags of the Round Table already?
No, it got delayed.
Got pushed back. Yeah, now you're gonna have to leave us in the middle of the show.
No, I think we're gonna do it later this afternoon.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's fine.
What about Jaguars.com Live? We got that today.
1 o'clock.
See,
1 o'clock,
all these things happening.
Some multimedia guy.
You're not gonna be able to cut out at 2 o'clock like you typically do. You're gonna have to stick around for Jags of the Round Table.
Cut out, get back. Yeah, you can. I can find creative ways to cut out.
All right. Fine. Mentally check out as far as that goes.
Long ago.
Big visit day yesterday here in Jacksonville. And a big visit day going on right now is Dante Fowler leads the contingent that's in the building. Mm-hmm. But he is not alone. I've been told that I'm allowed to tell you that Todd Gurley is here visiting right now. T.J. Yeldon is visiting here. The Alabama running back and Shane Ray is also in the building. I think I saw them all walk in this morning at about 8:30 when they came in. So anybody that you know is here that I'm missing?
That's the list that is my understanding. No, there's nobody that I know of that you're missing.
So the quartet we've got again is Fowler, Gurley, Yeldon, and Ray. I think, you know, we don't know how they feel about Shane Ray. I think for most of us, we don't think he's a likely selection for the Jags. But I know you guys talked about this, or Tony talked about this yesterday, Tony, about what did that list indicate to people, right? Because you had guys like Devontae Parker and guys that you wouldn't expect to be on the board for the Jags under consideration at number 3.
Right.
But I think what they're doing is clearly they're doing their due diligence on what if we get that offer to trade back, what is the pool of players that we like? Because I certainly don't think most of the players that they're having in are going to be on the board at the 36th pick.
Well, with the pre-draft stuff, it's if you want to get – always remember, we're talking about 8 or 9 names. They can get 1, maximum 2 of those guys realistically.
Sure.
So if you want to get excited about these names, that's great. If you want to look at the reality of the pre-draft process, remember that it starts for the GM and the higher-ups in the draft process, it starts with the Senior Bowl. And then there's the combine, and then there's pro day visits, and then there's these visits. It's all part of a big picture. You want to get to know all these guys. I don't put that much stock into the fact that these guys are here, as this is our target list. You want to do that. You want to make sure you've talked to everybody. And secondly, you want to make sure that you have all options covered. The last thing you want to do is be on the clock on the draft, having gotten a great trade opportunity back, and all of a sudden you're sitting at 8 when none of your scenarios said you're going to be sitting at 8, but you got a great offer. So you want to make sure you're prepared and that you're not trying to think on the fly on draft night. So you want to have looked at every possibility. Are they going to take Devontae Parker at 3? Probably not. If they get the right offer to trade back and they're sitting at 13, which is not a scenario anybody thinks about, but if they're sitting in one of those numbers and he's there, then you don't want to be Dave Caldwell and be trying to call the guy down the hall and say, what do you know about this guy? You want to have that innate knowledge. You want to be prepared for the test.
Oh, no question. I think we're maybe saying it a different way, but I think right. We agree on what we're talking about here. For instance, Cleveland has the 12th and the 19th pick. Let's say that the Tennessee Titans take a defensive player at number 2, and Mariota is a trade target. Cleveland comes up. The Jags somehow acquire both of those first-round picks. Now, all of a sudden, at 12, you've got to have done your homework on these guys. Right. And 19. I love that scenario, by the way, the 12 and the 19. It is interesting to me, though, that clearly, look, they're not going to bring in Marcus Mariota for a look because right. They feel like they're set at that position. So I do think you can glean something and say, okay, they're looking at a lot of pass rushers and a lot of defensive linemen. They're looking at a lot of running backs, both first round and later possibilities. Mm-hmm. And they're certainly looking at a lot of the premier wide receivers in here as well. They want to see how comfortable they are with that pool of players because I think you could realistically say those are their three biggest areas of need right now going into the draft.
And the intriguing thing, again, is if they can get back somehow and get a couple of first-round picks, whatever the scenario is. Because remember, there are always scenarios where other teams trade on draft night, and all of a sudden some other team has a second pick, and all of a sudden you've got a package that's not necessarily just Cleveland's picks, but maybe you've got this team's pick and another team's pick because you've made two deals, or another team's made a couple of deals. So you don't know how it's going to play out. But if you get back to 10 or 11 and somehow 20 or 21 in that range, which is the same 12 and 19 scenario, then you're right. Devontae Parker, most people think there's three wide receivers in the draft at the top, and he's certainly
at
one
the top,
of.
Correct. Yeah.
So you start getting into those scenarios where you can fill two of your needs, and it's really just a matter, I think, of how strongly Dave Caldwell feels about that group of five or six guys that are at the top. Are they clearly better and clearly a larger percentage chance to be a major difference maker than the guys you might get in the teens? Because I think you want to make sure you get what you think is a big-time player and not get two okay players.
I agree with you on that.
So I think that's sort of the wrestling match that he's going to go through leading up to the draft. And I just use Leonard Williams as an example because he's the guy everybody talks about. Or Leonard Williams or Dante Fowler. If those two guys are elite, how far do you move back where you lose the chance to get elite and you're just getting a couple of very good? I think you'd rather have one elite. This team needs guys who make a difference.
Agreed. And Dave Caldwell has said to us personally that, you know, it would take a lot to move out of the top 10.
Right.
Because you're typically, no matter in any year, if you're sitting at number 3, because there usually are tiers of guys, whether it's this year specifically or any other, you're going to have a tier maybe with the top 5 guys, the top 7 guys, then you're going to have another tier maybe of 3 or 4 guys. And to move back out of there, you're just not going to take necessarily a second round pick to go back all the way to number 12.
And the fascinating thing is we just don't know. All the talk we have and all the, we'll have the same conversation the Monday before the draft. On a Wild West Golden Gun Monday before the draft, we'll be talking about this. And you just don't know where Dave Caldwell's gut feeling ends on, these are my 3 or 4 guys, these are my 5 or 6 guys. If I go too far back, I'm not going to get one, so I ain't trading back with that. We won't find that out until 8 o'clock on draft night.
Sad for you missed Wild West on Monday a little bit?
Oh, it was brutal. Yeah.
I know.
It sounds like you had a Wild West Golden Gun Tuesday, too.
I did.
You threw all your days into one Tuesday.
I had them all just mixed up together. I wish someone had picked me up in a Claude Nolan Cadillac and driven me home because I could have used it, John. You really don't need any more of the gory details than I've already given you.
That's good.
Imagine how bad it could possibly be, and it was probably just about 1 degree worse than that.
Yeah, there's not much worse.
The place I ate at was not a sponsor, but I'm still not going to. I can't prove that it was the clam chowder, but I'm just going to say, be careful. Maybe you want to go a week without eating the clam chowder, wherever you typically go. That's all I'm going to say.
Clam chowder is an easy target.
I have evidence to back it up, so let's just leave it alone.
All right, Jack.
And move on from that point in time. Tony, what did I miss yesterday? How was Lauren Brooks? I must have missed her by moments. She was supposed to be here at like quarter till.
Yeah.
Like you said, at about 20 till, I left. I had to make a pit stop before I actually walked out the front door, so I could have missed her in transit.
Yeah,
yesterday.
She walked in, and I was like, he gone. I was like, he's out of here. He's not feeling well this morning. And look, she was kind enough to stick around for the whole 2 hours.
Oh, did she?
For the one-year anniversary show. So, yeah, we had a good time. Christoph gave us a call from across the pond over there. A couple other calls yesterday as well. Got to hear some of the favorite memories from people. Over the course of the last year, a lot of talk about Ryan O'Halloran and Justin Blackman.
Oh, dear.
It was Tuesday, the anniversary show?
Yesterday was one year show.
And you missed it. That made you sick.
I did. It made
the idea of that turned your stomach.
Well, I mean, I was without Tony on Monday, and then he was back on Tuesday. I said, that's it. I don't know if I feel comfortable with this whole setup anymore. I don't know. How was Mortensen yesterday? What did I miss? Anything
good?
He was
good. I mean, he was a lot more draft talk, and we talked to him a little bit about just how he feels and how the national media that he's around a lot of the time feel about where this Jaguars team is in the rebuild process. And we asked him, you know, what does he think the identity of the Jaguars is? And he's like, well, it's a team that plays hard, which I guess is the only thing that you can say about the Jags right now in a positive way from a national perspective. Are they building something? Yeah, they hopefully are. But I think it's difficult for us in Jacksonville to figure out exactly what the identity of this team is right now. And a national guy, it's interesting when I ask him, he's like, well, it's a team that plays for 60 minutes. That's about what you got right now.
Well, I think, too, you know, the guys that I talked to at the owners' meetings and the combine, and I haven't talked to Chris personally about this, but I also get the feeling that the national people, and if you look at it from a national perspective, they see it as a team with a defense that is getting close to maybe being good enough to be the identity of the team. That took a step last year, and that it's getting there. That could be the association with Gus Bradley. But obviously every national guy you talk to say, hey, it's a good theory they have. It's very good, or it's a good approach they have. It's very good that in 2 years there haven't been signs of cracking in terms of it falling apart. Players aren't complaining about it. The players still believe in it, so that's a positive. And you also get, hey, this team's won 7 games. It can't have another season like that and still be perceived as a team that's going in the right direction. I mean, it's very much a, we've been waiting and seeing on this. Now it's time to see it on the field.
Would you characterize, to totally digress here, last year, Blake Bortles selected 3rd overall. Really, very few people were on that scent, right? And so to me, I think it's fair to characterize that he was a bit of a wild card selection from the perception standpoint.
Right.
Okay.
Which, like, again, is amazing to me because I've been harping on this theme for about a week and a half now. I was at a pro day, Winston's pro day. And I looked around and realized David Caldwell, Gus Bradley, the contingent's not there. Somehow, David Caldwell last year was a good enough poker player to go to every significant quarterback pro day and convince everybody he wasn't looking at quarterback.
Right.
That's pretty good.
He's pretty good.
Because it wasn't just in-house guy over here who missed it. Everybody missed it except Hayes Carlisle.
Well, except Hayes. And I had Hayes on Monday and gave
and
him credit
for that. He's been dining on that for a year.
He should. Are you kidding me? I would do the same thing.
Anyway.
Without question. But look, my point being, that not many people were on the fact that attached Blake Bortles to the Jags, right? And it turned out that that was the guy that he loved all along. So if you hear that Dave Caldwell loves so-and-so, I'm going to doubt the veracity of that. So
sure.
I'm going to say people are guessing, okay? It may be true that he loves certain players, but if he could keep that a secret, he can certainly keep his feelings about Dante Fowler and Leonard Williams a secret as well. At least, you know, what the intensity of them. So today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question today is asking folks, who is the wild card that you could see the Jags drafting in round one, whether that be at the 3rd pick or through a trade back? And I'll just point this out because I got a tweet from our friend Cristiano. down in South America, you said, I don't think they're in a position to pick wild card players, must go for the top prospects. See, I'm not saying just look, whoever they take, they're going to think it's the best guy on the board, right, for them. So, you know, Bortles was a wild card guy in the sense that nobody saw it coming, or very few saw it coming.
It'd be a wild card, you know, what you want to have happen. Dave harps on this, and he's exactly right when it comes to the draft. You want to be in a position where if you have a pick at, you know, 11 or 12, nobody has any idea what you're doing because your needs don't really stand out like that. You want to be able to take the best guy available. That's what every GM wants to be able to do, is not have to worry about, is this guy a good enough guy? You know, no, just go take the best player. And that's sort of the Leonard Williams theory on the surface is, you know, if you really believe what sort of the consensus is and he's the best player, then maybe he overrides the fact that you've got Odric, you've got Tyson, you've got defensive tackles. You know, is he good enough to override what might be a short-term need at a position? That's what's intriguing about the top of the draft to me.
Share your thoughts on who a wild card pick for the Jags might be with their first pick in the draft. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, and at 1010XL Fat Tony. Also, John will give us a recap of what he saw from Dante Fowler and the other Florida prospects yesterday out in Gainesville at the Florida Pro Day. Dante is in the building right now along with a couple of the other top prospects that we mentioned a little while ago. We'll hear some of the audio of these players talking with J.P. Shadrick, Dante Fowler yesterday, as well as a couple of guys, Leonard Williams and Melvin Gordon, who sat down with Brian Sexton. All of that available at Jaguars.com. And we would encourage you to listen to the interviews in their entirety, but we'll just give you a little bit of taste of what some of those guys had to say about potentially playing here as a Jacksonville Jaguar. Also, who did Peter King suggest the Jags could be a long shot to be in play for? We'll get to that as well coming up. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony, it is Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Year two begins next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Of note, and we will get to it coming up shortly, ESPN has posted a, how do they characterize these, Tony? Inside the
NFL front office.
Okay. Basically, they get the five of their decision-maker types. Mark Dominic plays the general manager. Aaron Schatz is a stats guy. He plays the director of analytics. Todd McShay plays the director of college scouting. Lewis Riddick is your director of pro personnel. And they basically debate which pick is the most logical, most reasonable for each team, right? And they're operating under the assumption, for purposes of this, that the quarterbacks go 1-2 in the draft. So we'll
because
get
that's what they've done. They've done the first two picks,
right? And I don't think anybody has a clue where Mariota's going. I really don't. I mean, you hear all these rumors now. Chicago might be willing to trade Jay Cutler. Who the hell's going to trade for Jay Cutler's contract? No one. You got to pay Jay Cutler $15 million guaranteed this year?
Right.
Why? Why would you possibly do that? Now, maybe if the Bears ate $10 million of that. But
I think he'd be real tempting at the right price. $15 million ain't the right price.
$15 million is not the right price. And I don't know, man. I don't know how tempting he would be. Maybe to, like, the Bills, who would feel like they're that piece away. You know what I mean? I mean, because they've got a bunch of skill guys now. They've got Matt Cass. Of course, they have no first-round pick.
Guys with his talent are still hard. I mean, he'd be tempting for somebody.
He's got talent. Mm-hmm. Jeff George had talent, too. You know what I mean? I mean, there's some guys who are just not apparently cut out for great leadership roles. And I don't know. Without getting too far afield with the whole Jay Cutler thing, let's start with you yesterday. Dante Fowler, your impressions. Certainly seems like a guy who's got a great personality.
Yeah.
Right? Very confident in himself. You'd expect him and want him to be that. Thinks he's the best defensive player in the draft. Maybe the best player in the draft. Why shouldn't you feel that way if you're Dante Fowler? What do you think about watching him yesterday and some of the people you talked to?
He basically did drills where he tried to show that he could play in space. He knows that's sort of the thing. I think most NFL types believe he is capable of turning into a good pass rusher or being a good pass rusher very quickly. The knock on him is, can you cover? Can you do the other things? So he basically stood on all this stuff from the combine and did drills that tried to emphasize that, which, as I told Tony last night when we talked, I thought that was pretty smart. I mean, you're not going to, as a pass rusher, there's very little you can do on a pro day to have the scouts walking away going, well, that showed me he can rush the passer. That's awesome. You know, I mean, there, it's just not a scenario for that, or it's not a form for that. So he tried to use that environment to show that he could do other things, and he's an impressive guy. He's got the size. He can move around at the size that he's at. He's a guy who is not going to hurt himself in a pro day environment.
Interesting, as I'm trying to read this and listen to you at the same time.
Don't worry, just read.
I'm sure I caught every word of that. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Fat Tony here with you.
Why don't you go to the bathroom again? Get out of here.
I may have, for all you know, in the last the little soliloquy that you put on. No, I'm kidding. All these guys seem to be knocking Fowler in a different format. They're debating him on the CSPN piece. Tony tweeted it out, by the way, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Go to his timeline and get the link, and you can go directly to the story. But it does feel like Dante Fowler's the hot guy right now. You have Mike Mayock yesterday basically calling him 1 or 1A to Leonard Williams, right?
I thought was interesting because Mayock is typically – he's not a guy who is going to necessarily just praise a guy because he's at the pro day. I mean, there's always that tendency. You're at that pro day, so you see this guy running around, you're impressed, and you're like, hey, he's great. Mayock doesn't mind being critical when he's at the site where the guy is. So it strikes me that he really believes Fowler and Williams, there's not much of a difference between them.
My question would be, though, like,
which is not a – that's not the norm assessment.
If he's had Williams ranked ahead of him this whole time, has something changed? I mean, I always wonder, these guys, it's April. You've watched the film. Don't tell me you went back and watched more film. You've watched the film. If you haven't already.
Well, he's been pretty up on Fowler all along.
I didn't get the impression
that he was coming out of there giddy about what happened that day. I think he generally thinks that he's in that group along with Leonard Williams. So.
Brian Baldinger put out a mock yesterday or today, NFL.com, one of the six or so guys that they have posting their mock drafts. He actually has Dante Fowler. What? I wasn't knocking him for having six.
No, it's just funny that they have that many now.
The more mocks,
and
the
good
merrier,
luck finding
Tony.
Good luck finding it on their site.
Yeah, good luck finding anything on NFL.com. But
just Google.
Actually, I think NFL.com has become easier than ESPN.com to me to find stuff. But that's another thing. He's got Fowler going number 2 overall in his mock, which I haven't seen. But he's saying he's clearly the best pass rusher, in his opinion, in this draft, and that's going to be a more valuable commodity to Tennessee, the way they're constituted right now. And that's the commodity. That's what you want in the NFL, to be able to affect the quarterback. You don't often hear – I mean, Ndamukong Suh and J.J. Watt's a bad example because he does everything.
Right.
Pick your next Robert Quinn, maybe. Didn't have the best year last year. I'm trying to think who the next pass rusher would be. If Ndamukong Suh and that guy were both in the draft, and you kind of knew what you're going to get out of them, what's more valuable to you right now? And maybe it is Suh, because there are so few guys that
Justin
can do what
Houston,
he does.
Justin
Houston and Ndamukong Suh. What's more valuable? Guy who gave you 22 sacks last year, the guy who gave you 8.5, but everyone says just – tosses people around with brute strength like rag dolls, dominates the point of attack, eats up multiple blockers. I guess, you know, it's depends on what your philosophy is and potentially what you need for your team, right?
And again, it sort of goes back to, you can sit there and make this comparison all you want. Well, this guy reminds me of this guy, or this guy reminds me of this guy. I don't think either of these guys are going to be Suh level player or J.J. Watt level player.
Agreed.
So if you're playing that style but you're not that level of disruption, then I would say if you believe Dante Fowler, one of these guys, is an elite level, gets you 15 sacks a year 3 or 4 times, then that's probably more valuable. The other thing about this is I've always gotten the sense that trying to scout and project a pass rusher is more difficult, and you're generally in a coin flip type situation, whether the guy's going to be good or not, more so than a player like Leonard Williams, whose skills may be easier to translate.
Let me give you the some of the comments from some of these guys in this ESPN article here. Mark Dominic, again, plays the role of general manager, and he says the pick comes down to Williams and Fowler for him, and seems to indicate Fowler is his guy because he says the most important position in this defense is the Leo, and Fowler's the perfect fit. He's explosive, fast, powerful, has multiple pass rush moves. I see him as a double-digit sack guy for us from day one if we draft him. Williams would be great, but Fowler's a potential 15 sack guy. So that's where he goes, and he moves it on to Aaron Schatz, who's the analytics guy. He says, well, my question is, if he can give us 15 sacks, then how come he had 14 and a half in 3 years at Florida? I understand.
Again, I'm not big on trying. I think it's difficult to try to analyze a college player these days based on sacks, because I think college offenses do a really good job of minimizing pass rushing opportunities. The more people you talk to, the more difficult that position is to evaluate, especially if you're just looking at sacks.
He also goes on to say, despite the great 40 time, he says the metrics, according to his formulas, that the most correlate to success for pass rushers are vertical jump, broad jump, and three-cone drill, and Fowler did not excel at those at the combine. And that shows, look, you're not asking a guy to jump straight up very often, but what it's showing is explosive athleticism,
right,
burst, and change of direction with the three-cone drill and the ability to, you know, get around that corner quickly. And so he's saying that there's a high probability for him that Fowler actually turns into a bust and would rather pass on him and go in a different direction. So, I mean, that's – look, all this is –
I'll be the first to say, pass rushers always scare me when you're taking them high, because it's really feast or famine. You usually – it's either a home run or a strikeout.
McShay then weighs in. He says, purely off the draft board, based on tape evaluations, Williams is the best player. He'd have a hard time passing on him. And to a lesser extent...
is he significantly better?
Well,
that's always
the question.
That is
the question. You're right. I mean, how... don't you think that positional need somehow gets factored into the grade a little bit as well? It's already rolled into it. In my mind,
yeah,
it is.
I don't think it's factored into the grade, but it's hard to believe it doesn't get factored in to the pre-draft conversation when you're sitting there on Tuesday saying, who are we taking? Boy, it'd really be nice to have this guy to plug in over here. That's a tough thing to do in a vacuum and just ignore that factor.
McShay also says he'd have a tough time passing Amari Cooper and Kevin White at that spot. In fact, he has Winston number one, Williams two, Cooper and White 3 and 4.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot more of that.
Daniel Jeremiah, we're talking
much
about.
Much easier to project that these days, I think, than the other positions we're talking about. I mean, if you're looking at safe picks, and GMs like guys who they believe are going to pan out, that's a good thing if your pick works.
That's a key factor to success.
But that, you get the idea in the last couple of years that the league generally is getting an idea that it's an easier position to evaluate, perhaps, than it was a few years ago.
Daniel Jeremiah, NFL.com, NFL Network, has Williams as number one player. He's got White and Cooper. I think he has Fowler 4, and then he has Jameis Winston 5. So, again, there's a separation of some degree. I mean, all four of those top guys could be paper thin between them.
Well, I tell you what, being at Winston's Pro Day last week, I'd have to take him number one. But any GM who takes him number one is going to be taking it and just holding their breath.
Oh, there's no question.
It's just going to be – you're just basically saying,
I honestly don't know if
here
I
we
can
go.
Do it.
Here.
But you know what? The GMs, man, it's a transitory thing, right? I mean, you don't get forever to figure it
out. That's the thing.
And you're in position to take a quarterback. The Bucs
you
almost
have to take
a QB.
Because he's there, but then you're holding your breath. And
no question.
Yesterday, you're telling your wife, don't order the pool yet.
Finally – Lewis Riddick, who plays the director of pro personnel in this ESPN write-up, says, I love Amari Cooper. Wouldn't have any issues taking him this early because he plays a premium position. I think he's a special player. But to him, the second most important position on the field is pass rusher. And I agree we need a Leo similar to the role Chris Clemens played in Seattle. I just disagree, says Riddick, on which edge rusher to take. Says, I like Fowler, but I really don't understand the fascination with him as a potential top five pick. He isn't nearly as skilled a rusher, pass rusher, as Shane Ray or Vic Beasley. He doesn't have the moves. He doesn't have the same level of speed, bend, or ability to finish as either of those guys, or Randy Gregory, for that matter. I'm scared off by Gregory's positive drug test, so I understand why we'd avoid him in this conversation here. So,
Vic Beasley's fascinating.
Yeah.
And again, it will be. It's going to be a really interesting draft night, and not that they're all not interesting, but we're sitting here talking Fowler, and it's very possible Dave Caldwell is sitting down the hall laughing, and he's got a
Vic Beasley, right? He's hugging a Vic Beasley doll.
Football card in his wallet. He's
yes.
Fired up about it.
Yes.
So I mean, you know. We just don't know, and we'll have our storyline, we'll have our dialogue, there'll be the buzz in the air. And again, the more you cover these things after years and years and years, the more that you're not surprised when draft night is surprising.
Tony, now I'm picturing Agent Coulson with his Captain America cards going, they're vintage. Dave's got his collection of Vic Beasley cards.
He's got a little Vic Beasley dog that he won't take out of the package.
Yes. Yes, he does. A little bobblehead of Vic Beasley. Who knows? I think, honestly, when you look at this, hey, Bears, we don't want Jay. Can you give us something else and come up from five? Or no,
right.
Washington's got five. They've got seven. Washington's
come on
the
up.
Team. Come up from five, though, because...
You
know
want to replace
Arakpo?
Come on up and replace Arakpo.
They may well think the third guy on the defensive end list is the best guy on the defensive end list, and you probably get that guy at eight. So
well,
that's what's going to be fascinating. Can he pull something like that off if he wants to?
At five, if somebody traded up, you're assuming they're coming up for the quarterback because, let's say, Leonard Williams goes to Tennessee. So come on up from five, and Fowler or Beasley, one of them has to be there at number five. That wouldn't be such a bad way to go either if you get an extra second round pick or whatever you could get out of the Chicago or the Washington Redskins in that scenario. Who knows? We'll hear from Dante Fowler a little bit, as well as Leonard Williams and also Melvin Gordon. All that courtesy of Jaguars.com, where we encourage you to listen into the full interviews there. We've got tickets, by the way, right now. I got a pair of tickets to the Suns home opener. And then we'll get to some phone calls coming up shortly as well. We've got two pair of tickets we'll be giving away today, but we'll give away a pair of tickets right now to caller number three. Opening night is tomorrow night as the Suns take on the Jackson Generals. First pitch at 7:05. If you'd like a pair to go see the Jacksonville Suns debut in the 2015 season, be caller number three right now at 641-1010. Your phone calls next, along with hearing from some of the top draft prospects we've been discussing. It's 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, John Ocean, Fat Tony, Jaguars today, Metro Rooter. For all size plumbing jobs, in-home, commercial, industrial, septic systems, you name it, that has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter has a solution. With same-day service, weekends included, the right people with the right equipment. That's why they've been serving Jacksonville and the surrounding area since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Day. All right.
That's ironic. Somebody told me the other day we had to call Metro Rooter here in
just
the,
yesterday,
here in the building.
I'm pretty sure.
I didn't know what
case.
It was until I got in this morning.
Oh, I could tell you.
Right.
I'll tell you after the show. All right. 641-1010 is our number. If you'd like to get on, we'll get some phone calls going right now. And then we will hear a little bit from the folks at Jaguars.com talking with Dante Fowler, Leonard Williams, and Melvin Gordon. As we told you earlier, if you missed it, in the building today visiting, Dante Fowler is here visiting with the Jags, as is Todd Gurley, the Georgia running back, T.J. Yeldon, the Alabama running back, Shane Ray, the Missouri pass rusher. And according to various reports yesterday, we saw guys like Vic Beasley, Leonard Williams, Melvin Gordon, Randy Gregory, Amari Cooper, Devontae Parker, Eric Armstead.
This is SEC day today.
It is SEC day today. It's not a bad conference to draft players, Adam.
Fine.
Somebody get a memo to the last GM about that one. All right. You don't just exclusively draft from the SEC, but you're allowed to, on occasion, dip into that talent pool.
Every now
you?
And then,
yeah.
Or one of the Power Six conferences.
One of them.
Just any of them.
One of them, right? All right. Let's go get Maurice up here first on Jaguars today. Good morning, Maurice. How are you?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
What's up? Good. What's on your mind?
My question is about T.J. Yeldon, actually. You know, he's a big back. Physical, he can catch the ball out of the backfield. I think he has pretty good explosiveness, and he has pretty good vision as a running back. So I know that's a pretty popular question about where the Jags are going to draft a running back, maybe a second round or third round. I mean, how likely do you think it is that you could see Caldwell and Bradley drafting a guy like T.J. Yeldon over the other backs like Tevin Coleman or the kid from Boise State or somebody like that?
I don't think it's necessarily – look, I don't know how he feels about all these guys. I heard Tevin Coleman, by some analysts, think he's just a straight-line guy, you know, that fast. He's going to measure well, you know, in certain workouts, but he's not the all-around back you're looking for. But he may – they may opt – even if they have Jay Ajayi out of Boise State ranked higher, Duke Johnson ranked higher, they may say, you know what, the difference is – so insignificant that we'll take a chance at one of them, or a guy like T.J. Yeldon will right. be available around later.
Well, and think about what they did last year, and I forget exactly how it played out, but they didn't have two second-round picks going into last year's draft.
Correct.
So,
but they did have extra picks.
Right, but they weren't really thinking about getting both Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee. The opportunity arose. You have enough backs. Clearly, they're looking at Gurley and Gordon. I mean, they like the idea. If somehow scenarios fall where those guys are available, or you have to go up to get them, or whatever happens, they like that idea. But clearly, with Yeldon, they think top of the third, sometime in the second, some sort of trade scenario where we have an extra second round pick, or we're in that range. Again, it's about making sure you're ready for all scenarios. So I don't think they've decided, yes, we're going to go running back at the top of the second round. They're looking at, I'm sure, three or four different scenarios of the first day or the first 2 days, and they want to make sure they're prepared. I would be a little surprised at this point if they don't take a running back sometime in the first three rounds. But I don't think it's necessarily written in stone exactly what that scenario will be, because you don't want to write your scenarios in stone before the draft, because you got to leave yourself open to options.
If I had to guess, unless a Gordon or a Gurley is available at 36, or unless we're talking about, I'm talking about if they have the same seven picks going into the draft that
Correct.
They have now. Okay, again, trade down.
Which my guess is they're hoping they're not. I'm thinking
sure.
they're hoping they can get out of the three and at least add something of premium value in that second or third round.
See, I Tony and I debated this a little bit, to me, Todd Gurley is a guy that if he falls to the right range, if I had the extra picks to play with, I would move up to get. That is a guy I would move up to get.
Starting to get a feeling he may not slip to any.
Well, I tend to agree with that, but let's say that scenario with Cleveland.
You have to be ready.
If part of what the compensation is for the third pick was the 12th and the 19th selection, I think Gurley's on the board at either one of those spots under consideration for this football team.
And I got to think, even if you think falling to 12 is getting out of a 1 through 7 premium range, boy, 12 and 19 would be tough to pass up.
Boy, it would be very tough to pass up. And maybe you get a Bud Dupree, right, who is maybe he's just right there with some of those pass mm-hmm. rushers you're talking about. And for some reason, people love him as the next guy, but he's so far off the mark, you know. He's the current, or as he left the SEC, had the most sacks of any active player in the Southeastern Conference. Of course, we've talked about Jarvis Jones in that regard, too. Led the league consecutive years
right.
and has yet to basically crack an egg since getting to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Again, very difficult position to project off college stats.
Let's go to Jerome up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jerome.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I just want to say I'm just not that sold on Fowler. But I'm more with T-Wig. I just haven't had a shot to call in yet and talk to him, but I like Cooper at that number three spot. I mean, but as far as the running back, I think that Melvin would go first because Gurley, he's coming off an ACL, and I don't really know if you want to draft a running back. And I think, I mean, with a torn ACL or whatever, you know, with your first round pick, I think they'll probably draft him in the second round. I think Gurley will drop to the second. I really think Melvin will go in the first. But if Jacksonville does trade down, I wouldn't mind them taking Melvin Gordon. What do you
All
think?
Right.
One thing to keep in mind if you're trying to sort of read tea leaves on what Dave Caldwell is thinking, and that's always difficult, but at the owners' meetings, I think it was Ryan O'Halloran asked him about Gurley and the ACL. And obviously a general manager is going to do all the due diligence on something like that. But Caldwell also said very quickly, with a running back these days, if they're under the age of 26, generally speaking, history shows you that you can come back off that ACL and play at a very high level. I don't remember if he said you can reach what you were before, but you can get very close. Bottom line is, it didn't sound from listening to Dave Caldwell like that ACL was going to be a factor in whether or not he drafted Todd Gurley.
Now, every player is different. Just because one guy has success doesn't mean the next guy will. But, and I realize not all these guys went in the first round, but I think in hindsight they would have. Frank Gore, ACL, multiple ACLs, right?
Right.
Curtis Martin.
Now, multiple is a little different, obviously. But anyway,
right, but I'm just, my point,
your point
being,
is they.
Look, he came with multiple ones. Frank Gore's a borderline Hall of Famer. Curtis Martin is a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Willis McGahee's a very good pro that the Bills decided to take in the first round and basically sit on for a year and turn into a very good guy. Adrian Peterson came back from a torn ACL the very next year and never missed a beat. Now, these
again,
guys
at
are
the
exceptional.
Age factors into the equation, and it was clear from Dave Caldwell's comment that they've looked at this and researched it, because he said he used the age 26, I think it was. If it's before that, then it's really not. The perception on that has changed in the last 5, 6, 7 years on how much that injury hurts. Now, if you have other stuff, Lattimore was a different deal. Like, you know, Marcus Lattimore had.
Right. It's one thing just to tear the ACL. It's another.
Correct.
Marcus Lattimore, they said, had a spaghetti knee. He blew up the whole
knee. All knee injuries are not created equal. So you have to get in there. You have to be able to take a look at Gurley. You have to
Which is coming up, by the way.
Things.
He skipped it at the combine. He's going back to Indianapolis for a kind of a league-wide medical check.
Which
coming
is
up.
Common for a player who's not evaluated medically at the combine.
And getting back to the call there, too, mentioning Amari Cooper there at 3, we've talked a lot about the scenario for the Jags if the quarterbacks come off 1 and 2 and now they're having to decide between Leonard Williams and one of these other pass rushers. If Williams is the guy that comes off the board at 2 and you can't get out of that spot, you don't have a trade you like for somebody coming up to get Mariota, well, now you're debating between a bunch of guys that we are talking about, pass rushers that may be graded below Amari Cooper. Now what's the decision you make? If it's not Williams and Fowler you're deciding between, but it's Fowler and Cooper.
I find it hard to believe that out of Washington, the Jets, the Bears, we're not talking about dropping in the mid-teens here. We're talking about dropping 5, 6, 7, that they wouldn't have somebody come up and give them
they'd at least have an opportunity
something palatable
to
move down, you know, 2 or 3 spots.
Probably.
Because if you have, Tony, in that scenario, you're saying you kind of got a bunch of guys. I mean, you almost take a little bit less in that, right? Boy, first and second round pick, all of a sudden a high second to move back. I think I'd be lining up to, and we don't know, but I think you're right. Maybe if they do have a drop off between Williams and this other group of pass rushers, and they do have these, look, Dave Caldwell told us flat out, they're not at the point where they have to draft for need. All right, we got to take a quick timeout. We will come back here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday and take a look at this date in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL. Still want to get to some of that sound from some of these draft prospects. More of your phone calls. Plus, who did Peter King say the Jags could be a long shot to be in play for? All that coming your way on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Happy birthday, April 8th, 1968. Don Davey, former Jaguar defensive lineman, was born. Did Don get into, like, triathlons? For some reason, I think he did, right? After, I know, Bacella, was that a phase for Tony? Did Tony?
All I know is there's this Wikipedia page up here on the wall.
And it says
that... It talks about Tony's triathlons and all the weight he lost after he stopped playing.
He did lose a lot.
It's an old Wikipedia article.
He put some back. I mean, he did lose. Tony looked a lot better. He lost a lot of weight. Tony was a massive human being. I mean, he's not nearly as big as he was. He's a big guy, but he's not. I think Tony's in good shape.
He is in good shape. He's in good shape.
A lot of these guys. Don Davey really trimmed down. But happy birthday, Don. Enjoy your day. In 1966, the AFL chose 36-year-old Al Davis as their commissioner. And he got along so well with everyone from that point forward.
I miss Al.
Oh, my goodness.
I really do.
His son is an interesting-looking fellow.
Like, can you imagine how much more fun this draft would be if Al Davis was sitting there at 4? God only knows what was
going to happen. Well, everyone, look, a lot of people already have Kevin White going there, but they'd have him trading up to number 1 to take Kevin White because he'd be the speediest receiver
just in case
available. And then Philip Dorsett in round two would
That's
be
right.
his selection.
You
there.
Can't risk that Tampa would want Kevin White.
The greatness of the Raiders. So there you have it. The state in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality fencing product for you at a competitive price and provide you with unsurpassed customer service. Your family's going to feel protected. You're going to breathe easier knowing that the Best Fence Company installed your new fence. They'll provide you a professional free estimate at your convenience if you call them at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, the Aaron Hernandez trial is now in jury deliberations. It only took the defense one day to present their case. Both sides' closing arguments took one day combined. The jury was in deliberations for an hour and a half yesterday. We'll resume those today. The SEC is upset with former defensive back Will Allen, not the Powerhouse Football Conference, but the Security Exchange Commission. Allen is being charged with helping run a $32 million Ponzi scheme that ran from 2012 until February of this year. LeGarrette Blount has been suspended for the first game of the 2015 NFL season, stemming from an arrest that occurred last year in the preseason. The charges against Blount on a marijuana charge were dropped in January. Yep, the NFL punishment machine is working as fast as ever. The Miami Dolphins had wide receiver Greg Jennings in for a visit yesterday, and today Wes Welker is expected to visit with the Fins. That's where he got his real start in the NFL. He was signed as an unsigned free agent coming out of the draft by San Diego, was cut by San Diego, wound up in Miami, and that's where he was traded eventually to the New England Patriots.
Now, what'd they get for him? Second, was it a second-round pick? Or
I believe it was.
Something like that, right? And they
good
clearly,
trade.
That turned out to be a good trade, certainly. At this stage, man, I mean, is there a bigger concussion risk in the NFL than Wes Welker with his history?
The Great Gazoo!
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
And that's why a guy with his track record of productivity has waited this long to get a look from anybody. Aaron Hernandez, man. Basically, his lawyers yesterday admitted he was on the scene of the murder, right? He said, well, Aaron witnessed the murder and didn't know what to do, so he just put one foot forward in front of the other and just kept going. Huh? And he went back to his house and destroyed his security system and did all this other stuff,
right,
that if you were just a witness to the murder, would indicate that
right.
you might not do.
Did the trial go so badly that became your last ditch
I think,
defense?
Honestly, that's what they're saying, Tony, is that it is going so badly that they're hoping maybe he can be accessory to murder that he'll get convicted on instead of first-degree murder. Keep it in mind, he faces gun charges. He faces another double murder trial still to come at some point in time. Probably safe to drop him off your fantasy team at this point in time, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron Hernandez. It was a tough cut going back a couple of years now, but had to be done.
You had him on your team. Well, you had him
on several.
You got 35 teams.
I have 19 teams. Don't exaggerate.
As I've told Mike, I've told this story before, but it's the most painful waiver claim I've ever put in my life was dropping Aaron Hernandez to pick up Kyle Orton. It was the most painful thing I've ever done. I was just like, I got it. Oh, doggone it, it's done. It was awful.
Yeah, probably not as awful as it was for Odin Lloyd, but
no, not nearly.
None the
no,
not even.
There's obviously real world consequences here
true.
That matter.
Speaking of a fantasy superstar from years gone by, Adrian Peterson, wanted to get to this item. Peter King, in his Monday Morning Quarterback letters column today, was talking about Adrian Peterson. The belief is now no further suspension for AP. He met with the league yesterday and that he will be fully reinstated. The question is, will he be a Viking or will he be traded somewhere else? And basically he wrote about the Cardinals and the Cowboys, two of the most likely, if not the two most likely teams that have been connected with him as potential trade partners, and why it wouldn't necessarily make sense for them to even give up a second round pick because they're pretty tight up against the cap. In fact, Adrian Peterson's current contract would put Arizona over the cap. The Cowboys could just squeeze it in. And, you know, you got your rookies and you have to have some wiggle room too. Mm-hmm. Guys get hurt, all that stuff. So he said, and just take this for what it is, because I saw a headline that said, you know, Peter King says the Jaguars are the upset special team to trade for Adrian Peterson. Okay, that's fine. But then read a little bit deeper, much like the whole Mercedes Lewis thing on Monday. Read the actual details of what's being written here. And it's not being reported that the Jags are going to do this, but he says, I see my upset special, Jacksonville, still awash in cap money, making this deal only if Peterson can make the financials easier on them, keeping in mind he's owed about $15 million on average over the next 3 years, and if the Vikings were willing to take a lesser pick for him as well. He says, for now, I don't think the Vikings are willing to do that, so it's a stalemate, moot point, however you
so
want to
characterize. So basically he's saying incorrectly, so if the entire dynamics of the situation
changed, then they might
then
be
a possibility.
Yes.
Wait. And I'm not saying that tongue in cheek, but yeah, if the dynamics of the situation change, it's similar in that sense to DeMarco Murray. Had the dynamics of the situation been different, had Dave Caldwell gotten the sense that the Jaguars were DeMarco Murray's first choice, then I think the dynamics of that situation would have been different. And
rather than just a leverage team, right, to maybe drive up
right.
his price.
So, if it looks like Adrian Peterson is willing to come down off that $15 million a year or whatever you just quoted number, then I think David Caldwell would relook at it and say, okay, well, that's different.
Yeah, this year I think it's $12.75 million.
13 with the workout bonus, but yeah.
Okay, 14.75 next year, 16.75 the year after that. So about the
Adrian Peterson could make himself 27. I think he'd really look at
it. Absolutely, and he's not. And you know, some people say, hey, you know, he had a year off to rest the legs, but he's also
a year,
had a lot of carries and had an ACL tear. You know, later compared to some of these other guys that we're talking about. We don't think that Adrian Peterson's just going to reduce that number. But let's say
if time passes, the number
to me, if time passes, Adrian Peterson would be smart just to say, you know what, the Vikings are willing to pay me all this money. I'm going to take all this money. That's what I would do if I was AP.
It's yes
at this stage of his career, right? But you know,
because especially for running back, every year that passes is a year fewer to get that money.
No question. Especially now, you're already turned 30 years old.
Right.
You're not
going
to get too many more blockbuster years out of him. But
and he has that option. He can always do that.
Last week, Ryan O'Halloran was in here. He brought up he thinks that Mercedes Lewis will be not a member of the Jaguars. He thinks he'll be traded by the draft. And that's his feeling. That rolled into Pro Football Talk on Monday, creating a headline that said the Jags are trying to trade Mercedes Lewis. They took that, and they took Gene Fournette, saying, look, if they got this for Eugene Monroe, they could probably expect this if they were to trade.
Right, if they were.
Marseille. And it's very frustrating to me that people do not actually read beyond the headline. Okay? Even the PFT story.
Welcome to my world,
Mike. Oh my gosh, John. I mean, it's crazy. Even the PFT headline, in the story, it said, the writers seem to suggest,
right.
Okay? Didn't even say they reported. And then if you actually bothered to click the link instead of just reading,
yeah, that clicks a tricky thing,
reporting.
Mike. You got to scroll over.
But it's so lazy.
Think what you got to do. You got to double click sometimes, Mike. I mean, sometimes
this
your computer such that you have to click twice.
Well, this computer's slow at times, and that might frustrate me.
Yeah.
But I put the effort in because it's a Jaguar story.
Oh,
we're
okay.
Covering the Jaguars. I'm not just going to say Pro Football Talk is reporting this. They're not reporting anything.
No.
They're aggregating in a blog stories from the Florida Times Union, which we're not reporting. That Mercedes Lewis is going to be traded or is on the block. Now, he may, in fact, be traded, but that is not what's being reported.
Right. As I wrote, following this, because I got the same questions in the Ozone, of course. Would it surprise you if conversations are taking place? No. I mean, it wouldn't shock you at all if at some point somebody had said, what's going to take for Mercedes Lewis? And David said, X, Y, and Z. Okay, we'll talk to you later.
But that is not
That's not what
was being reported.
Clearly not what was reported. I tend to agree with Ryan. I think there's a pretty good chance that he won't be here by the draft. But it also really wouldn't shock you if it's the other way. I don't think they're just going to give him away. There are certainly things you can do with him. So, but no, it was not reported, and I don't think Ryan would represent himself as having been reporting that.
I don't think he would either. But that's why. It was so frustrating to see that story bandied about as this is happening. This is what's actually happening. It just drove me nuts.
I like that. How old are you? 40?
46.
And you still have that passion. It still bothers you. It still irritates. It happens. I see it all the time. It's whatever.
Ah! Anyway, to tie this all together with Adrian Peterson, Ryan at first suggested, and in his, he suggested it on the show,
mm-hmm.
and then he suggested it in the paper the next day that maybe a way for the Jags to facilitate a trade would be to convert some of that money to a signing bonus so the new team didn't have to take on $6.65 million in salary. So that my point being, if the Vikings, in an effort to move Adrian Peterson, if it's clear Adrian Peterson doesn't want to be there and they want to get something for him, and I don't know what their cap situation is, maybe they eat $5 million of that money this year.
The side of that is, if you're going to be there with Mercedes and you're going to give him money, maybe Steve will take less than that.
Let me ask you that, though. Ryan says, because they're so far under the cap, they're not allowed to approach him about a salary restructure just for a lesser number.
You're not. It can still get done, you would think.
What is Mercedes' approach to them about? Hey, could I take less money, guys? I mean, they would have to approach him about that, right? To get it done.
Yes.
Minnesota has around $13 million in cap space right now.
Okay. Obviously, they'd save a bunch by moving him, but they could eat a chunk of that if they wanted to. I'm not suggesting they're necessarily going to do that, because if you got that commodity, I think I make Adrian Peterson blink and probably come play for me.
Me too.
At that number.
Right.
They've already indicated. But I'm just saying, in a hypothetical world.
And you're only, getting back to AP, if you're Adrian Peterson and your only choice, and you start to realize in whatever month it is, you're April, May 15th, everybody else is in OTAs, and you start to realize, I've got a choice to either play for somebody for $8 million or to go play for Minnesota for $12.7
right.
and $15. Well, at his age, he's got a finite, or they all have finite numbers, but he has a small finite number of years to go earn money. Well, at his age, is it important enough for him to earn the 12 and the 15 to go play for Minnesota? You don't, at age 30 in this league, if you're going to leave money on the table, you do it very carefully.
And he's not exactly in the sweet spot in terms of endorsements these days.
Nope.
Either. So that's another factor. All right.
It'd be a difficult sell.
We've got another pair of Suns tickets. The opener tomorrow versus the Jackson Generals at the baseball grounds at Jacksonville. 7:05 first pitch. Be the fourth caller right now at 641-1010. And those tickets are yours, courtesy of 1010XL, 92.5 FM. I promised you, and I promised you all morning, we'd hear from some of these draft prospects. We will do that next. It's Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL. XL 92.5 FM. That was Ozier live right there. Cackling.
Hey, I will break out a rap song every now and then.
You've got what? You got Jaguars.com live coming up at 1 o'clock? Is that correct?
Yes, I will have Will Brinson from CBS Sports on.
Like
and
Will, he's a good Blanca. Guy.
Will is a good guy. Funny, and does a nice job of monitoring the league in a very modern social media way. I like Will a lot.
We met him at the Super Bowl. At least I hadn't met him before.
Mm-hmm.
I had quite a few drinks in me at that point. When I met Will, remember that was Friday night, I want to say, or last night, when we ended up going out to dinner, Tony, with Lauren, and then we were wherever we were downtown.
Went to that bar at a hotel downtown.
Yeah, that's where I met Will Brinson.
Okay.
Did you not? You may have. I think I pointed him out. And we talked about it. We all had a few drinks that night.
I don't remember that.
Anyway, he actually had Jay Ajayi in the first round as his third running back in his latest mock draft that I saw, which, just interesting of note. All right, Dante Fowler in the building right now. Dante Fowler, Todd Gurley, TJ Yeldon, and Shane Ray all visiting with the Jags today. Maybe more. That's the ones we've been able to confirm so far. And was out at his pro day yesterday. And I think J.P. Shadrick was with him yesterday.
Yes.
In fact, he was. And the entire interview is at Jaguars.com. And if you're a Jag fan, you probably already watched it. But you should go check it out if you haven't. Dante Fowler, Leonard Williams, and Melvin Gordon with Brian Sexton all up there. And there'll be plenty more to come in the days and weeks ahead. But Fowler was asked about the mock drafts, having him going inside the top five. And does he see those mocks, and does he think he's worthy of that kind of pick?
I don't follow the mock drafts. It was kind of hard at the combine, and, that was really what was going on. We saw it all over TV, all over NFL Network. But, in my opinion, I've been hearing the buzz. I think I'm the number one defensive guy that should come off the board. And I say that because I'm just, an overall complete football player in this draft right now, a defensive player in this draft right now. And there's a lot of other great guys. But as far as going to get the quarterback and being a true defensive player that can come in there and make an impact as, the first day you step in, that's me.
I love the confidence of Dante Fowler that showed up yesterday after that pro day, talking about wanting to be the guy that's the first to cross the stage because Marcus and Jameis don't want to go. Then call my name at three, baby. I'll be the first one on that stage. Like, I love that
confidence and that swagger. Yeah, it'd be just like being the number one pick.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I love that idea and that attitude that he has about this entire process. Dante Fowler, also with J.P. Shadrick yesterday, talked about the interactions thus far he's had with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, it's been good. I'm actually going to visit the Jags today, right after this, and we're going to spend some time with each other, and we're going to be up there tomorrow. So I actually have family up there. I'm looking forward to getting up there. Jacksonville, the red, the blue and red game with Florida and Georgia, those are my favorite games. So I love what they did with the stadium and, you know, the new scoreboards and everything like that. Jacksonville is a great place. I love it.
How did he let red come out of his mouth first there before quickly
Ooh.
Catching himself?
Ooh. What did he say? I missed that.
He said the blue and red game here with Florida, Georgia every year. I'm sure Brian Sexton, as he's been doing with all the in-house guys, will probably sit down with Dante and we'll get more from him on Jaguars.com. But he talked about yesterday what he proved at the pro day that he didn't necessarily get a chance to do in some other opportunities.
I just want to prove we did a lot of linebacker drills today, so I feel like I came in as a linebacker today. I weighed in at 265, so just showing them that I can move with my weight and how fluid I am with my weight and how smooth I am. I just want to show them that I'm a very polished player. I know a lot of guys had, you know, some concerns because, you know, I stand up and I put my hand in the dirt, but I want to show those guys I'm as good as my hand up, as good as I am my hand in the dirt as well.
A couple clips from Brian Sexton talking to a couple of these draft guys as well. Sexton had the opportunity to sit down with Leonard Williams. He asked him, what does Leonard Williams need to improve upon?
Something that you can always get better at is your hands, you know, no matter what. It's just big art and defensive line. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of things I need to work on that are, you know, small adjustments like staying low and, coming out of my stance, just getting off the ball and, all those little details.
All right, let's hear this too. I'm not quite sure. I haven't heard the cut, but he gives his thoughts on Jacksonville. Maybe just in visiting with the franchise, what his impressions were. Certainly, his kid. What? Where'd he go? High school in Daytona? Was he? It was in Daytona. A lot of people thought he'd go to University
to Mainland,
of Florida. I think you're right.
I want Mainland.
Yeah, Daytona Beach, Mainland. So he gives his thoughts. I think more on the organization, what he's seen from them, and again, talking with Brian Sexton yesterday.
I think just being here so far, I have a good vibe of, you know, just talking to the coaches. They seem to like me a lot, and I got to ask
Leonard,
them.
Everyone likes you a lot right now.
I mean, yeah, that's a good thing, but at the same time, I think it's good that I was able to ask them a few questions. You know, the biggest thing with me is, they see me play a lot of different positions on film, and I like to ask the coaches on my visits, where do they see me fit in their schemes and stuff. And the D-line coach was telling me that, three technique would probably be best, just in attack mode.
Brian about to ask him to prom there. I wasn't sure.
A little creepy.
That was. I wasn't sure. I just kidding. Sexton does
Brian's
have a man
a big
crush on
Leonard
it.
Williams fan.
He told us when he got back from USC's pro day that this team will be absolutely out of their mind if they don't take him. If
I'm
he's
about
there.
To say yeah. We were asking the hypothetical question a little bit. What's with all the hype around Dante Fowler? He worked out yesterday. That's what's with all the hype around Dante Fowler.
Prior to yesterday,
it's like when Leonard Williams had his pro day 2 weeks ago. That's what there was this whirlwind of. Yep, Leonard Williams is definitely that guy. And now that we have Dante Fowler's workout, it's like the last guy to have the workout is the one where there's all this hype leading up to the draft, it feels like. Brian Sexton, Jaguars.com, talking to all these guys as they come through the building. I'm sure there's a lot more to come throughout the week and then the next week with these guys, including Dante Fowler, in the building today. But Brian Sexton had the opportunity to sit down with Melvin Gordon, the running back, and asked him on the feeling he gets from the Jags.
You know, you just get that good feeling. You know, there's some great people around here. And especially when I walk in the Gus room, you know, I feel like if a person walked in there a little, you know, depressed or whatever, just with his personality and how, you know, how up he is, I mean, it'll get a guy going quick. You know, get a guy in good spirits quick. You know, I think that's just the type of personality he had. Like, as soon as I walked in there, I was, you know, hit his hand, I was smiling already, you know. So, I mean, it's just crazy. And I think he bring that, you know, to everyone around here. You know, everyone around here is good people, man. You kind of just sense that. So I'm definitely enjoying it.
There's definitely that element that they try to create. In the end, I mean, we talk about it so often. Not going to matter if you don't win games,
no.
Right? That's why you want them as someone who covers a team to succeed, mm-hmm. because they are so
Good guys.
Good, such good guys. Easy to get along with, easy to work with, easy to deal with. And I'm walking, my sister, and her family are in town staying with me. So I brought them up here on Monday after the show and just kind of walked them around the building a little bit. And, Dave Caldwell was walking in, coming in from a run outside. He stopped and I said, hey, this is my family. He stopped, shook everyone's hand, yeah. Talked to him for, I mean,
good that's people.
Just, really he's good a GM people. Of a football team with the draft 3 weeks away. Right. I mean, it's just little things like that, I think, that go a long way. They only go so far, though. Good players
well,
and
that's
wins.
Not across the board. Not every GM would have done that. So
that's my point, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the organization is the face of it. There's nothing hidden and sinister. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. Everything you see publicly, we get a chance, Tony and I, for the last year to see behind the scenes like you have
right.
For a long time, every single day. And it's just that way.
Yeah, I wouldn't have stopped. I mean, I'll be honest with you. You probably wouldn't have wanted me to stop.
Fortunato stopped. You probably wouldn't have stopped. I would have been like, I don't know who that guy is.
Yeah,
I'm really not sure.
Don't like him. Don't want to like him.
Maybe a blogger or something like that. I'm really not positive. Today we asked you in the fan feedback spotlight, either with the third overall pick or through a trade back, who is the wild card selection? You could see the Jags maybe pulling something out of left field, much like Blake Bortles was to a lot of people. Again, think back. Now maybe it makes perfect sense to you, and you see all the dots line up. But when did dots line up? I'm not sure what that even means.
Yeah, I'm forever sitting around the house lining up dots.
Line up the dots, man. okay, the dots are all lined up, and they say Blake Bortles will be the pick. But like in that vein. Dante Fowler would not be a wild card pick. Leonard Williams would not be a wild card pick at this time. You can make the argument for Vic Beasley, but he's becoming more of a, you've been conditioned more to right. think that it wouldn't be so out
I think
of the box.
Wild cards would be receiver. I think if they picked receiver 2 days later, we'd all be going, yeah, I get it. I see how that would work. You know, I see why they would do that, and they're solid picks, and they seem to be safe. But right now, I think it would be surprising if it happened.
I definitely agree. That would be a wild card. I'd be very surprised if they went receiver, particularly again another year where it's supposed to be extremely deep at wide receiver.
But you could see the logic if they did it.
Absolutely. So, we brought this stat up the other day, John. And look, we get all the circumstances, all the rookies they were playing. But for the third time since 2006, I think it was, the Jags had their leading receiver have the lowest total of any team's leading receiver in the National Football League. Alan Hearns, 677. No team, every team had a receiver with more yards than 677. The really depressing one, we went back to 2011. Mercedes Lewis led the Jags with 460 yards.
That was a tough year.
That is brutal, man. And Matt Jones, I forget what the total was, did it with a very low total in 2006.
Mercedes Lewis, that's our third all-time leading receiver.
But 460. Oh, my goodness. 460. That's like two big games for elite, super elite receiver, maybe a three-week stretch. Odell Beckham, how many weeks did it take him to cover 460 last year?
Two and a half weeks.
A couple of, you know, years ago.
Josh Gordon, right, 2 years ago, doing the same thing. Justin Blackman, for that matter, in a four-game stretch a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Top that. All right, coming back, we'll get your reaction to the fan feedback spotlight. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, down the stretch they come here. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, John Osier, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. Fat Tony here with you, the host of all anniversary shows on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5
right.
FM. And today, fan feedback spotlight asking you, who would be the wild card guy? Leonard Williams is not a wild card. Dante Fowler is not a wild card. In your opinion, maybe Vic Beasley's not a wild card, whatever the case may be. But whether taking a guy at number three who would be unexpected, or if the Jags were to trade down, and I suppose at that point everything's a bit of a wild card, but who would become the wild card selection that you think could be the Jags' first pick in the draft? Tony, what kind of reaction did we get on Twitter?
Here's what we got from Nick, just throwing this out there. Nose tackle Danny Shelton, especially if you were able to trade down with Cleveland for pick 12 and 19. Hashtag Aloha. Based on what I've seen, I wouldn't expect Shelton to be there at 12, at least on the projections right now. Black Dog Express, I don't think you could get much more wild than taking Todd Gurley with the first pick. From Cristiano, I don't think they're in position to pick wild card players. Must go for the top prospects. Okay. From Jason, Gurley, we're all saying there's no chance it happens at 3, so it'll probably happen at 3. From Michael, At three, it's Kevin White and a trade down, say 12 and 19, Gregory, Dupree, and Gurley. From Ronald, Bud Dupree if the Jags trade down, and from at Irish Jaguar, Todd Gurley via the trade down.
All right, a reminder to throw the hashtag Jaguars today or tweet Tony a two or he'll freeze you out. Here are a couple of tweets.
Oh, if it doesn't have the hashtag, I don't read it.
Here are a couple of the tweets that I got. One from Demetrius dedicated to the six says, Jags trade back with Cleveland in a trade that includes the 12th and 19th. At 12, we take a sliding Randy Gregory and get Todd Gurley at 19. I can't even count on, I don't even know if Gurley's going to make it to 19. I think people are going to, if they feel good about that knee, I think he's going to start to get elevated up. Now, top 10 may be out of reach, but.
I tend to agree with you. I think he's going to be one of those guys that a pretty good team that thinks they need that. They're looking at Seattle. Seattle's been running well. San Francisco did it. I don't think it's going to be a league trend, but I think at least one team's going to think that and do it.
Well, yeah, right. Seattle traded their first for Jimmy Graham.
I'm not saying Seattle. I'm saying people are going to look and see what Seattle, San Francisco have done.
Gotcha.
And say, you know what? Again, I don't think it's going to turn into a league trend, but I think it's out there enough and enough people's idea that it can work that somebody will do it.
Bolt City Brigade, Phoenix, BCB underscore PHX weighing in. Amari Cooper just doesn't seem like what Caldwell will go for per pass drafts, hence making it a wild card selection. I got a bunch of them here on the Facebook page as well. Dustin Smith, I don't know how serious this is. Trade Bortles to the Titans for Mariota. Yeah, that ain't happening.
Whoa.
It ain't happening. That would be a wild card.
Yeah.
But it's not happening.
Then
you'd have the second and third picks in that scenario.
Yeah, I had the draft Mariota and try to trade him after you draft him call last night, too.
Yeah, I've seen that here too. One of these I got, it said wild card player at number three is Adrian Jackson. Said surely it's got to be Mariota, either with the intention of swinging a draft day trade or because you can never have too many quarterbacks.
You can't.
Both.
First of all, you can.
Yes, you can. You can have too many quarterbacks, and if you're look from everything I've said about Blake, there's no reason to think that they're disappointed in what they got out of the guy. And they said going in to or coming out of last year's draft that had Blake returned for his last season at UCF, that they felt he would be the best available quarterback. That would include
your
seasoning.
And I just think it's too risky to go the route of taking a guy, having him on your roster.
No.
If you're going to do, you just don't know what happens next, and then all of a sudden you got this guy you don't want.
Correct. One of those guys you wouldn't want, right? I mean, you wouldn't either way. And once he's there, I always compare draft picks to cars. Once you drive them off the lot, they depreciate. Okay.
Right.
You can get a lot for the third pick in the draft. Once you pick that player, you're never going to get the same equal value unless he proves to be an all-pro.
Now, if it's a direct turnaround on that night where, two picks later, which you see happen in the NBA,
but you're picking for a team in that scenario.
But the NFL, historically, that's just not how it works.
The only one we really can remember is the Eli Manning-Philip Rivers deal.
Yeah.
Right there. And if they got stuck with Eli, the San Diego Chargers, they didn't have a quarterback. Or that they
right?
I mean, that was...
They didn't dislike him. I mean...
Did they have Breeze still on the roster? They had Breeze, but they weren't convinced that he was going to stay healthy enough, right?
Yeah.
They weren't committed to Drew Breeze at
that point. You know, it's amazing. I looked and I had forgotten it. Philip Rivers played about four games in his first 2 years. I'm remembering that, that's amazing when you think about it. The fact that they were able to sort of keep him under wraps for that long and give him that sort of time. I digress, but I had forgotten that it was that long.
But keeping in mind, they got in that deal, right? They got who's the pass rusher that they got? Who was
Sean Merriman?
Sean Merriman, who was at least defensive player of the year, I think, in his second year. Obviously, went the whole PED route and, couldn't stay healthy, washed out of the league. They also got Nate Kading with one of those picks. It turned out to be a really good kicker for a long time for them. So they got more than just the quarterback with that one pick.
Yeah.
And getting Merriman. And Merriman, so at least they could walk away and say, well, we've got an instant impact from this guy.
Yeah, he was darn good for
and
a couple of years.
We're developing this other guy. A couple of others here. I think it won't be running back this early, but I think Alvin Dupree or Brandon Scherff are on the team's radar.
At three.
This is either at three or through a trade down.
Yeah, I just don't see an offensive lineman that early. But not to throw water on that.
Pre-Parnell signing, I think, had you traded back a few spots, I think that was definitely
Right, but we're not pre-Parnell sign.
I agree with that. Let's see. Joshua Lee writes that Kevin White at number three would be a wild card or trade down with the Browns or Saints and snatch up either Gurley or Gordon. Another one for Melvin Gordon from Devin Zook. Let's see. Trade back, give us Gurley later in the first round, said Johnny Crum. Cameron Franklin said either Dante Fowler or a trade down and Amari Cooper. I want Rashad Perryman. He has made that clear on Twitter to me as well. Dante Fowler would not be a wild card selection. Rashad Perryman, it's interesting. I talked to a guy who's more of a fantasy football scout, but he's a guy who watches a lot of films. His name's Matt Waldman. If you play fantasy football, you've probably heard of the guy. And he puts out something called the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And it's lined up for fantasy football owners to draft guys in Dynasty League so you know the incoming rookie class. But he puts out a 1,400-page workup.
All on Perryman?
Just on the offensive skill position guys. And he goes through and shows you his methodology, what he's looking for. He watches when he can get his hands on film. When he doesn't, he watches, you know, regular broadcasts. And he doesn't claim to be, you know, a super scout or whatever, but he felt that Perryman had pretty good hands. And I brought that up with him. I said, because Tony and I have talked about this when it comes to him on the air at UCF, that the knock you see in the scouting reports is guy can't catch cold. He's got great athleticism. And he said, I don't know where that comes from. Not the film I'm watching. So maybe there's a mixed bag of opinions out there because most of the pundits have him ranked among the top 32 prospects in the draft. So there's a wild card for you right there, right?
It'd be really wild to see him at three, but yeah.
Oh, at three? But again, they were in a trade-down scenario. You know, he played with Blake at UCF.
And I think that's, again, as we talked about, that's what's so fascinating is, by definition, we're going to have to focus and talk about number three for the next couple of weeks because that's where they are. They're not, and it's not going to change before the draft. And yet there is this thought in the back of my mind. I just think that night is going to be wild, something to not be able to predict. Because you can't predict the trade. So we're going to be writing and talking about something that night, I think, that none of us anticipated happened.
No offense to Dante Fowler, who may be listening down the hall for all we know. But
what up, Dante?
If the draft goes quarterback, and maybe removes the trade down possibility for the Jags, and they take Fowler over Williams, there are going to be some people that are going to be happy. I think there's going to be some people that are like, what in the hell are they doing with this selection here?
And that's going to get split three ways, by the way. I think there's going to be a group of people that are fine with Fowler and have been the whole time, but there's going to be the Williams contingent that is going to say it's the best player in the draft. How can you pass on him? And there's going to be that big contingent of fans that we talk to every day and hear from that are, why are you taking Fowler over Beasley?
Right.
Why are you making that call?
To a lesser degree, Amari Cooper.
Right. Why didn't you trade like that? Which, again, sometimes does, yeah.
It's got to present itself,
right?
Obviously. Look, if I'm a GM, I would probably take less in some of these deals to trade back because the risk factor is so high with all of these guys.
It absolutely
is. Give me three swings at it rather than the one, and especially if that first swing is within striking distance of the one I already have.
If you're going to turn down a trade in this draft, you better really love that guy.
Think about this. Some teams thought Blaine Gabbert was better than J.J. Watt. Well, maybe only one team.
At least one.
Maybe only one. Put it this way. What did Watt go, 11th overall in the draft?
I think so, yeah.
Where would he go, negative six? I mean, you couldn't draft him high enough, right? J.J. Watt would be the first player off the board if you reset that board, even with Cam Newton.
Yep.
Wouldn't you take him over Cam Newton,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, you know.
And boy, except for quarterbacks, what a great draft that was.
Except for quarterbacks, right. Yeah. Well, you're right. But the quarterbacks, Jake Locker has just retired.
Right.
Gabbert, then Ponder.
Right.
And
everybody
you know,
else in that draft.
There were a lot of good ones.
Top 15 is remarkable.
Yeah, a lot of good ones. But, hey, we got Bowanko out of that.
We did.
Right? I like Luke, man, but no offense, I'd probably tip the scales to J.J. Watt on that one.
He probably would not be offended by that.
By a smidge. Because, don't you hate going back? Because then you sit there in the second round.
Can't do it.
And you could have had, were Dalton and Kaepernick both on the board, or were they off the board by the time the Jags' second pick came up. I want to say at least one of them was off the board.
I will pass along a couple things as we finish up here. The Buccaneers worked out Jameis Winston today, actually just finished working out Jameis Winston. One of the reports from that workout says that they ran him through. It was only about 25 passes, and then the coaches were like, that's it. That's all we need to see. Jameis was kind of chuckling about it. He's like, what? That's all? And so everyone's kind of smiling and laughing. Apparently,
he has not lost the ability to throw the football in the last 2 weeks.
Probably a pretty good workout there. And Matt Miller at NFL Draft Scout tweeted out here in the last 5 minutes or so. He said, what I would do, draft Dante Fowler at number 3. What he thinks they'll do, draft Vic Beasley at number 3. So, again, just fodder getting put out there.
He's kind of been on that trend. I think he's tweeted that a couple of times. Now, again, I don't think anybody really knows what they believe that the Jaguars will do.
Well, you know, and the thing with Washington sitting there at 5, as long as you have RG3 on that roster, isn't it hard to move up for another quarterback? I mean, just if you're going to open camp with him as your starter, because once you make that move up, you're signaling that's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
RG3's time is coming gone. He may be a placeholder for a season, but that's all he's going to be. And so I find it hard to believe that Washington will be the team that moves out of 5, but that's the ideal spot. That is such the ideal spot.
Yeah, because as soon as you do it, obviously, that's the seismic shift in eras. RG3 era is over.
And absolutely. Right.
You can't undo that.
Which is fascinating that, you know, Chris Mortensen, who Tony talked to yesterday, basically has said 90% sure that the Johnny Manziel era is over before it got started in Cleveland. You know, Peter King backed him up on that. We don't know for sure, but they say everything, all the talk is about Josh McCown. I still don't get the whole Josh McCown thing. I still don't get it. He had half a good season, half of one good season. He's 30-whatever years old. But I guess that's where they are in Johnny Manziel. All right, Osh, you got Jaguars.com live coming up today?
Yeah, 1 o'clock we'll have Will Brinson and Luke Boenko. And, you know, we'll have a lot more interviews with the guys who are in the building.
Tell Luke I think he's just this close to J.J. Watt. This close.
He'll appreciate
he's
that.
He's right there.
He thinks so highly of you.
With J.J. I know he does. And also you've got Jags of the Roundtable. You're filming later today?
Yes, later this week.
All right, so look for that coming up on Jaguars.com as well. For Johnny O, for Fat Tony, for Joe Fortunato and Tyler Devitt, I'm Mike Dempsey. Happy to be back in the seat. We've got XL Primetime coming up next here. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. This has been Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.